From KQED.
From KQED's Sacramento Bureau, this is the California Report. Good morning to you. I'm John Sepulveda. Sacramento is a city that often shrugs at a protest. It's common to see hundreds of people holding signs at the Capitol, bust in from faraway parts of California. But what's happening this week in Sacramento is different. These are the chants of local activists protesting a local killing, that of 22-year-old Stephon Clark. Two Sacramento police officers shot him while he was in the backyard of his grandmother's house holding a cell phone. There is video footage of this incident. There are questions of why the officers opened fire. And there have been protests, like this one yesterday, in front of the district attorney's office. Also protested, the city hall offices. Also protested, the city's NBA franchise, the Sacramento Kings. Brazy Liberty is a 28-year-old organizer from the Oak Park neighborhood of Sacramento. And he says these protests are going to be more effective than previous demonstrations across the country, and that the officers who shot Stephon Clark will be fired. As we talk, I remind him that huge demonstrations after other police shootings across the country have often not resulted in firings. And a warning, the language will be intense.
You're not wrong in saying that, and it's not even only black folks, it's brown people as well. But I feel like that's gonna be different in Sacramento, California. Yeah, it's gonna be different here.
Why do you think it's gonna be different?
It's gonna be different because we're not gonna let up. We're gonna stay persistent, stay consistent, stay on their line. And if they don't do what they're supposed to do, what we're telling them they need to do, then the people will react, and it's not going to be a reaction that they want.
There seems to be a concerted effort to shut down businesses, including the Sacramento Kings, downtown. Is that part of the strategy to hit this economically and not just politically?
Indeed, indeed. We also want to make as much people uncomfortable so they can be aware of what's going on and not just going into a basketball game and not knowing that their city is basically on fire. And they need to speak to their mayor, Daryl Steinberg, and if they want to start continue to go to games and not be interrupted, then they need to make their mayor do what he needs to do and talk to who he needs to talk to to fire these cops and make sure they're convicted.
So that's ultimately what you want to see. You want to see these police officers removed from their positions, and you want to see them charged with a crime and ultimately convicted.
Yeah, I'm going to see these officers charged, the two officers that let off 20 rounds on Stephon Clark. And also, we want the pigs out of our communities. We want the pigs to stop harassing us, and that's on an everyday scale. It's about Stephon Clark, but it's about everyday life because I'm a black man.
A lot of people are going to hear that language. They're going to hear the word pigs, and they're immediately going to recoil and say, we don't want people to get shot, but I can't get on board with calling police officers that.
Well, if they have a problem with the police and law enforcement being called pigs, then they're not really for the people. They're not for oppressed people. So I wouldn't even expect those people to get on board if they feel offended that someone that looks like me is calling a police officer a pig. Because to me, that's what they are. They're pigs. They don't show me no respect. I've always been brutalized by police. I've never had a good encounter with a police officer.
What are the ways that you've been brutalized by the police?
I've been snatched out of my vehicle for no reason. I've been beat up by police officers. I've been harassed just for sitting in my vehicle on a public place where I can sit in my vehicle. I've been criminalized for just for being me.
And you think it's because of your skin color?
No other reason. And all these encounters happen with white police officers. I'm Stephon Clark. I could have easily been gunned down for being somewhere and being black at the wrong time. I could have easily been identified as a possible suspect. You know what I'm saying? So all my black people, all my oppressed people listening, we just need to stick together, be united as a front.
That's 28-year-old Brazy Liberty. Meanwhile, Sacramento's chief deputy district attorney, Steve Grippy, told us that, quote, the one thing people have to realize is that people don't begin our part of the review until we get all of the evidence and all of the investigation in. He goes on to say that often takes a couple of months in and of itself. He says, quote, I understand people are anxious and frustrated and angry, but we have to do our job right. Meanwhile, the funeral for Stephon Clark will be held today. Here's KQED's Katie Orr.
The funeral is open to the public and has been moved to a church in South Sacramento to accommodate the expected crowd. Reverend Al Sharpton is scheduled to give the eulogy. Clark's death has sparked days of demonstrations in Sacramento. At various points, protesters have shut down Interstate 5, twice blocked fans from entering the city's basketball arena before games, and caused a city council meeting about the shooting to end early. Still, the protests have been largely peaceful, and many activists are hopeful this can be a turning point for the city and its policing policies. For the California Report, I'm Katie Orr in Sacramento.
And we'll provide comprehensive coverage of the Clark funeral tomorrow on the show. As for now, we're going to move on. As we've been reporting, the sheriff coroner in San Joaquin County is under scrutiny for the way he's handled death investigations. Now, as KQED's Julie Small reports, he's decided to hold public hearings in cases where a law enforcement officer was involved in a fatality.
Sheriff Steve Moore will now hold an inquest for deaths that occurred in custody or during pursuit or arrest. During an inquest, the coroner, a deputy, or an independent hearing officer, typically an attorney, selects and questions witnesses. The public may attend. Either the hearing officer or a 9-member jury of county residents considers the evidence and then decides whether the deceased person died by accident, homicide, suicide, or in a natural way. Matthew Guichard is a private attorney who has conducted inquests in Contra Costa County for 15 years.
I am a fan of it because it puts out into the open the circumstances of the death. And it doesn't get into whether there's criminal or civil responsibility on the part of anyone.
Contra Costa County began conducting coroner inquests for all in-custody deaths in the 1980s. Guichard says it's made a difference in how those deaths are viewed by the public.
Putting it out into the open, the circumstance, in my view, has significantly reduced the number of lawsuits afterwards because parties, families oftentimes listen and go, okay, so this is the first time they really hear an exhaustive story of precisely what happened.
Only a handful of other counties in California conduct public inquests. Critics say the proceeding gives a false appearance of impartiality when, in fact, the sheriff coroner runs the operation, selects the witnesses and jury, and can therefore sway the outcome. For the California Report, I'm Julie Small.
As some local governments push back against the state's controversial sanctuary law, California's attorney general says it does allow law enforcement some wiggle room. Here's KQED's Marisa Lagos.
In a memo released Wednesday, California Attorney General Javier Becerra says local law enforcement officials can talk to federal authorities about a person's immigration status under California's sanctuary law. That law bars California police from using their own resources to assist Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. The guidance comes one day after the Orange County Board of Supervisors voted to join the Trump administration in a lawsuit against the state, challenging the sanctuary law. And 2 days after Orange County Sheriff said she will publish online the release dates of all inmates in an attempt to help ICE target undocumented immigrants. In the 9-page bulletin released Wednesday, Becerra's office indicates that the sheriff's decision to publish all release dates online does comply with state law. For the California Report, I'm Marisa Lagos.
All right, let's go to Los Angeles now. During a packed meeting on Tuesday, city council members there heard from a steady stream of neighborhood activists opposed to Senator Scott Wiener's bill, SB 827. Now, if this became law, it would loosen or eliminate local height and density restrictions on residential projects near mass transit routes. KCRW's Saul Gonzalez reports.
Backers say the legislation is needed to create more housing in California and reduce congestion. But opponents say SB 827 will supercharge real estate speculation and gentrification, forcing people from their homes. Jill Stort is with the group Coalition to Preserve LA.
Let's say you live in a 6-unit building. If they can put 40 units in there, your building's gone, you will be displaced. Your land, your property, your rental is screwed.
Those kind of arguments convinced the city council, which voted 13-0 to oppose SB 827, making it the largest city in the state to do so. After the vote, officials like LA Councilman Paul Koretz said the legislation is a threat to the character of LA neighborhoods.
Well, I think this is the worst planning bill ever to come out of Sacramento. Having giant, tall, narrow buildings in the middle of intact single-family neighborhoods will just make Los Angeles look like Dubai.
Responding to the city council's vote, Senator Weiner says he looks forward to a dialogue with Los Angeles about possible changes to the bill, but says aggressive measures are needed to deal with California's housing crisis. For the California Report, I'm Saul Gonzalez in Los Angeles.
Support for the California Report comes from the James Irvine Foundation. Accepting nominations now for the 2019 James Irvine Foundation Leadership Awards at irvine.org. The California Healthcare Foundation, helping low-income Californians get the health care they need. On the web at chcf.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.
It's opening day for Major League Baseball. That means it's time to play ball for 30 teams in the league, five of which are here in California. And there are 750 players on those teams' active rosters, thousands more in the minor league system. And the one thing they all have in common, they're men. KQED's Nina Thorson talks with a filmmaker who's looked at why that is.
Almost everything about race and gender in the United States is reflected in baseball from the start.
One of my players was hit every single time she was at bat just trying to play high school baseball. The entire league decided they would hit her.
People want to create fear. They're afraid of something being different.
That's a clip from the film Shutout, the battle American women wage to play baseball. You heard the voices of political scientist Jennifer Ring, Justine Siegel, a coach who founded the organization Baseball for All, and Isla Borders, who pitched for the St. Paul Saints and is now a scout for MLB. John Leonardikas is the filmmaker, and he joins me now. And John, this film is part of a baseball storytelling series you've been doing for Amazon, a streaming video called The Sweet Spot. This will be in your third season?
That's right. We dedicated our entire third season to the story of gender discrimination in baseball. Like so many of us, I saw the movie A League of Their Own and was very interested in the story of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. And then I was equally shocked that baseball for women went dormant after 1954 when the league died out. And it just kind of persisted today that there are women that are police officers and firefighters and doctors. But where are they in the world of baseball? You can't really you find them on less than one hand in the executive suites in Major League Baseball. You certainly don't see them umpiring yet, and we don't see them really moving up the ranks as players because they kind of get shunted off into softball when it comes time to go to play baseball in high school and in college. So I thought that this disparity was troubling, and it kind of struck at the core of what it means to be American. How in the world can we be preventing half of our population from playing our national pastime?
And we should be clear, this is not really about when will a woman play for the major leagues.
Right.
But that said, do you think it's going to be in our lifetime?
Well, I think it's entirely possible. Baseball is a game of specialists. I could see someone coming in as a relief pitcher. They're got some special pitch, and they're going to take people out in the late innings of the game. I could see possibly a second base person. And listen, David Eckstein is 5'6". He's been a 2-time World Series champion. So it's not about brute strength in baseball.
John Leonardikas is the filmmaker of Shutout, the battle American women wage to play baseball.
And that's the California Report for Thursday, March 29th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm John Sepulvedo. Have a great day.